Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer. This is a real coup. You've got Lawrence Krauss, Dr. Lawrence Krauss,
yeah,
a leading physicist. I think one of the top five popular physicists in the whole world. And you debated him. He's an atheist.
He's an evolutionist.
Yep. You were debating this Aaron Raw.
Yeah.
And he mentioned Lawrence Krauss. And so, hey, now you get the chance to say, well,
right,
okay, well, I'll just go interview the guy.
It was a fun talk, but I do ask Lawrence Krauss at the beginning if he could help me, because he's a theoretical physicist, emphasis on the theoretical. I'm a Bible teacher, pastor.
So kind of like David versus Goliath without the slingshot.
That's right. And so I ask him, Lawrence, could you help me? If you know that there are scientists who would agree with me when we're disagreeing, you know the science better than I do. Would you help me out when I need help?
Did he help you much?
You know, he said he would, as long as it's on the science. And I said, yeah, that's what I want. I don't think he helped. Fred, there was one part where he schooled me, and rightly so. I made a mistake. Do you remember what that was? You listened to this once.
Yeah, the ratio of electrons to protons, the mass ratio,
right.
You had stated a number that was actually the standard deviation between the two.
Standard deviation.
It's an easy mistake to
but
make.
But it was a big mistake. I should have realized there's an even number. There's a one-to-one ratio of electrons to protons. We were talking about how the universe appears to be exquisitely fine-tuned, which he agreed to later in the debate. He agreed to that. But there are so many electrons and protons in the universe. What's the likelihood that they're going to have a one-to-one relationship? Like on Earth, men and women, there's a one-to-one relationship, but not perfect.
It's not quite one-to-one, right?
Right.
I think it's 51% women.
Right, yeah, like that. But what if we found out of all the 7 billion people in the world, it was one man to one woman to not a thousandth of a percent or a millionth, but to a billionth of a percent. Like there's exactly the same number. We would be shocked.
That would be real interesting data. That'd
right.
be like, wow, what's up with that?
How could that be? So perfect. Well, in the whole universe, if you want to know how accurate is the one-to-one ratio of electrons to protons, it's 1 to 10 to the 37th with 37 zeros. That's not one in a trillion. Quadrillion, quintillion, septillion, that's 1 to 10,000 decillion. It's like this perfect
huge
ratio.
Big number, yeah.
Big. And so why is it? And Lawrence Krauss never quite helped me out with that.
No, he didn't point out that your 10 to the 37 was the deviation. So.
No, he could have.
He could have, but he didn't.
He didn't. And he even uses a standard deviation argument himself later in our interview about the 2.7 degrees background temperature of the universe.
Yes.
Why don't we
start the tape?
Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Today we will interview best-selling American science author Lawrence Krauss. Now, over in Europe, under the watchful eye of leading evolutionists, belief in atheistic origins is more popular than it is here in the U.S. For example, in America, 60% of U.S. medical doctors say that they believe that God was involved in the origin of life. Now, that's according to a survey run by evolutionists at a prestigious institute. And as reported in the journal Science, 60% of public school biology teachers, the same percentage coincidentally, do not endorse Darwinism in the classroom. So it's here in America where Lawrence Krauss, theoretical physicist, emphasis on the theoretical, is trying his best to convince us that not only is God unnecessary for life, but he's not necessary for the origin of the cosmos either. His latest book is Why Is There Something Rather Than Nothing? A Universe from Nothing. Dr. Krauss, welcome to Real Science Friday. Why do you think there is something rather than nothing?
Because we can see it, first of all. I'm pretty sure there's not nothing.
Yeah,
I'm reasonably certain empirically that that's a fact.
Yeah,
the fact that we're on the telephone today is a good example.
Yes, there are people I debate who would go off on a tangent at that point and deny that we could know anything. But I'm glad that you agree there is something.
Oh, there absolutely is, yes. And the question, the amazing thing is how it's really, from a scientific perspective, the really important thing is a how question, not a why question, because what we really want to know is how everything we see, the galaxies of the 100 billion galaxies in the observable universe, each containing 100 billion stars, created a Big Bang 13.7 billion years ago, how all of that arose potentially from nothing. And what is the amazing thing is when we look at the universe and measure what we've measured, it is perfectly consistent with a universe that could spontaneously arise due to the laws of quantum mechanics from literally nothing. The total energy of the universe appears to be zero, which, of course, is kind of what you might expect of a universe that came from nothing. And everything we've discovered seems to point in that direction. Now, it's only a plausibility argument. We don't know the laws of physics back to t equals zero or before. We know it pretty close. We've been able to, but with our machines at the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva, recreate the conditions of the universe back to about a millionth of a millionth of a second after the Big Bang, and have made some recent discoveries of a major new particle there. And so, but what we've been able to say is that plausibly, it's certainly plausible, and doesn't look like there's any need for any supernatural shenanigans.
Now,
the laws of physics will do it.
Now, Lawrence Krauss, you know, as I've just introduced myself, that I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church.
Yes.
So if I end up disagreeing with you on a point and you're able, with your knowledge, to confirm that there are many scientists who would agree with me, could you let the audience know? Because I might need your help in refuting you.
Sure, yeah. As long as we're, if we're talking science, absolutely.
Yeah, if we're talking science, you're a best-selling author. So I'd like to say to you that this is a well-written book. But that's a bit like telling a girl you met on a blind date that she has a great personality. Because I so disagree with what you write, but between you and Richard Dawkins, you guys concede fully half of the argument to us creationists and to the intelligent design folks.
Hold on a second. Let's just sit back and say, the question is, do you disagree with the science? And if so, what's your scientific
base? I love the science. Oh. I'm an amateur. I'm a radio talk show host for 22 years, five days a week. I've debated people like Michael Shermer, Eugenie Scott. Back in the 90s, Eugenie Scott was on with me for an hour, and she said the best evidence for evolution was junk DNA. And I said, the Bible teacher, I said, well, Eugenie, don't you think it's too early in our study of genetics to conclude affirmatively that all this non-coding, all those regions are junk? And she said, we have it. We sell the DVD. She said, we absolutely know affirmatively that it has no function. Now fast forward 15 years, and it's the Bible pastor who was right.
Well,
world's leading atheists who is wrong, scientist.
Well, first of all, Jeannie isn't a geneticist.
No,
I mean, I'm a little worried when people make a mistake and say something, then suddenly it doesn't mean the science is wrong. It means the scientist is wrong.
Well, I agree with that.
To say we affirmatively, I'm surprised Jeannie would say that, because in science we generally cannot, regarding things we don't yet understand, we can't affirmatively argue with certainty about anything.
Well, that's a great point. But you guys have, like you and Richard Dawkins, you guys appeared on stage together recently. Mm-hmm. You guys have fully conceded half of our argument.
Well, I don't know which half.
Well,
I mean,
okay, let me tell you.
The universe had a beginning. If you want to go there, I'll agree with that.
Richard Dawkins repeats everywhere he speaks that biology is the study of things that appear to be designed. And to explain what appears to be, on your part, the exquisite design of our universe, you believe that there are trillions of universes, so that ours appears beautifully designed just by dumb luck. Because
well,
if you have septillions...
First of all, let's stop a second. I don't even use the word believe. Scientists don't use the word believe. I don't believe anything. What the question is, what does the data tell me? What's more likely? What's less likely? What's been ruled out by the data? And in fact, the universe is not particularly exquisitely designed for us. It's exquisitely designed to exist. It could be a lot better. In fact, we probably live in the worst of all universes for the long-term future of life.
we're able to observe.
Is non-zero. If it was zero, the universe would be better.
Dr. Krauss, from our position, you say the sun is in an insignificant corner of our galaxy. From our position, unlike the vast majority of stars in our Milky Way, we are able to observe not only the Milky Way to an extraordinary degree, but the entire universe. We have such an extraordinary opportunity because of where we are.
Well, it's not unique by how you're right. We're lucky. We're unlucky in a way.
Yeah.
We can observe the rest of the universe, but we can't observe most of our own galaxy. So it just depends.
It's like
someone who lives on the other side of the tracks. It's always greener.
Well, but if we were in the cluster, right?
We can see, but we are very unlucky. We can't see what we can't see.
If we were in the cluster where most of the stars are in the center of our spiral galaxy, there would be so much interference, we might not be able to see hardly anything.
Well, you know, the point is we don't exactly know, first of all, the conditions, what life would be like, for example, there. And you're absolutely right that if we were right in the center of our galaxy, probably not only would we not be able to observe anything, but it'd probably be pretty hard for life to have evolved. But because we're in the outskirts of the galaxy, which is probably true for only, say, maybe 30 billion of the 100 billion stars in our galaxy. So we're one of 30 billion lucky stars, if you want to call it that, and that's fine. But, I mean, again, it's one of these things where it would be very surprising for us to find ourselves in a place we couldn't live. Do you agree with that?
Well,
it's surprising for us to find ourselves
Lawrence,
having evolved.
That's like a doctor saying the reason your father is deaf is because he can't hear.
No, it's not. It's not too surprising that we find ourselves in a place that's conducive for life.
Well,
do you agree with that statement?
I think that's a non sequitur.
It's a
word game to try to
explain. It's a tautology, not a non sequitur.
Well, right. The extraordinary unlikelihood, the fine-tuning of the physical properties of the universe, and then the extraordinary unlikelihood.
That fine-tuning you're talking about? I mean, you sound like you're an expert in this, and I assume you're not, but you're just spouting off some words that you've heard. So I'd like to know what fine-tuning you're talking about.
All right. I've been doing a show for 22 years, 5 days a week. I'll tell you.
Program.
The electron-to-proton mass ratio, right? It's 1 to 10 by what? 30-some zeros.
No, the electron-to-proton mass ratio is 1 in 2,000.
1 in 2,000?
Yeah.
The electron-to-proton mass ratio?
Yeah, it's 1 in 2,000. Yeah, the electron weighs 1 2,000th the mass of the proton. It's good we're doing a little education here.
Okay, well, you're absolutely right. I'm not talking about 1 to 1. I'm talking about in the entire universe.
Oh, no. Actually, there are an equal number of electrons to protons. The universe is electrically neutral.
All right. Well, you got me there.
Good, okay.
You got me there. I have to accept your word because...
Well, you don't have to accept
no,
my word.
No,
you
on a matter of fact...
I don't want you to accept anything I
well,
say.
No, Lawrence,
well, skeptical of me
on a matter of
you.
Fact, you've got your degree from, what, MIT? You were
MIT,
at Harvard,
yeah.
Yale, Case
right.
Western, ASU.
Yeah.
By the way, I studied at ASU back in the 80s, artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company, Microsoft, and been a talk show host ever since. Mm. But so, okay, I apologize. I'll correct that.
What things
there's
are
the
fine
finely
tuned.
Tuned parameters, right? There's the gravitational force constant.
Yeah, it is what it is. What do you mean it's fine tuned?
There's the electromagnetic force constant. There's the ratio of the number of electrons to protons. So,
which is one.
All right. So the reason that so many astrophysicists, cosmologists have gone to asserting the multiverse that there are trillions upon trillions of universes is because they say ours is such that it is so wildly unlikely.
No,
there's no good reason for it to be here unless there were septillions.
That's not the case. And by the way, the multiverse is very speculative, and essentially nothing, almost nothing that I've written about having to do with how the universe could come from nothing depends upon there being a multiverse. We've been driven to the multiverse by ideas in particle physics, which to some extent naturally predict the existence of many different universes. Now, there are certain parameters, and you didn't mention any of them, I think, because you're not aware of them.
Yeah,
there are
certain,
which are, but in my book, I describe them in detail. There are certain parameters, like the energy of empty space, that's very inexplicable. We can't understand why the energy of empty space is what it is.
Yeah, right.
And one of the arguments that's been presented, and it's been done a number of times throughout the history of science, is called the anthropic principle, that namely, something along the lines of what you're saying, namely, if it were any different, then galaxies wouldn't form and life as we know it wouldn't form, etc. So if it's a random event, then if it were any different, we wouldn't be here. Now, I should say that that's a plausible and possible answer, resolution to that problem, and it's motivated in some sense by the possible existence of many universes, which are predicted by many particle physics theories. Yeah. But in the past, when the anthropic principle has been applied to parameters we haven't understood, we've often found that, in fact, it's wrong, that we understand the parameters. It used to be the case for nuclear forces that they had to be finely tuned so the stars would burn the way they were, and people thought, well, it's just anthropic. Well, now we have a fundamental theory called the strong interaction, which describes the interactions of quarks inside protons and neutrons that explains all that. And so
the point is that,
you know, your God of the gas argument, which I'm sure you don't really want to use, suggests because we don't understand something. And if some scientists suggest one possibility is that it's a random variable, and it is what it is because we're here to measure it, is one possibility. But the fact that we don't understand it and it's inexplicable otherwise at present means there's a God. Well, that's a pretty bad argument, as you know, because the minute we understand it, your God's going to go out the window.
Lawrence, in your book, as you've just said, you talk about nothing. I mean, you talk about the geometry of space and the energy that fills the geometry of space. But to clarify, you're not denying, are you, that there are physicists around the world who have calculated the unlikely existence of these fine-tuned parameters and have looked at our universe and said that it is wildly, wildly unlikely.
No, I actually am denying that.
Are you denying that?
Yeah, I'm denying that because no one can calculate the probability answer. There are many people who are saying, look, the parameters of our universe seem rather strange. And maybe they're random, and it would be nice to calculate the probability that they occur. But we don't know the probability distribution over all universes because we don't know the underlying physics
of the multiverse.
So no one can calculate the probability distribution. Well, if they say they are,
This is what's driven people to say that there are at least 10 to the 500, 10 to the 500 zeros universes.
Sorry, you got it wrong. Hold on. The reason that people say there may be 10 to the 500 universes is some people who think that string theory might be a good theory at the basis of quantum gravity.
Which you don't like.
Pointed out that string theory predicts 10 to the 500 different universes.
Yeah, and there are other physicists who are saying that number, that's a paltry number compared to the number of universes. There must be virtually infinite.
Well, then,
lo and behold, we find ourselves here in this one where we're able to exist.
The point is, all of that may be true. I don't see what your problem is.
Well, I am surprised. Could I just object for the record that you're denying that there are a legion of physicists who look at the parameters of the universe, gravitational force constant, electromagnetic force constant, and so on, and they say this is very unlikely, therefore there's likely trillions of universes, and we happen to be in the one that supports our existence.
Well,
I'm shocked that you deny that.
It's the case of people who stretch the truth. You've got one or two things right, but your conclusions are wrong. There are many physicists who argue that the parameters of our universe are difficult to comprehend. There are many physicists who point out that there are various fundamental theories that predict the existence of many different universes, and therefore one possibility to explain the parameters that we see is that they are randomly distributed over universes, and we only exist in the universes that allow life.
Stop the tape. Stop the tape. Hey, Bob always wanted to say that.
Fred, this happens through this discussion where Lawrence Krauss will say, like, he's never heard of an idea, and then he ends up saying, well, that's actually a pretty good idea, and there are people who claim that.
He's consistent at contradiction.
Lawrence Krauss said, like a good atheist, we don't believe anything.
Yeah, he doesn't believe in belief.
He doesn't believe anything, but is there something rather than nothing? He said there absolutely is something rather than nothing. And that's a contradiction, fundamental contradictions throughout. Now, we have the advantage, we've heard the whole thing. I mentioned atheist scientist. He says, what's an atheist? What's an evolutionist? What are people?
What is Darwinism?
What is Darwinism? They all do that, like Eugene Scott, Aaron Roth.
It's a new talking points with evolutionists, and you'll hear this as we go on. He'll ask, what are people?
So I'll say the discoverer of DNA and your friend, Richard Dawkins, say that maybe life came from outer space. He's like, why does he deny it at first? I never heard anybody. Haven't you heard of panspermia? There's like 500,000 pages on the internet that talk about panspermia. I never heard of such a thing. And then within a few minutes, he's heard of it.
Yeah.
It's a reasonable theory, some people think.
Yes.
And Freddie just did that with this fine-tuning. He says, you know, many say that the parameters of the universe are difficult to explain. Maybe some randomness helps us explain it. That's exactly what I've been saying for the last 5 minutes.
Exactly. He contradicted himself.
He denies it each time something comes up. He denies it. Then later he admits it. It's this quirk, this idiosyncrasy among evolutionists, atheists. It's a device to avoid actually talking about the substance and pretend that the person you're talking to is an idiot and they don't know anything. So you could just make believe you don't know what neo-Darwinism is. You don't know what anything is. It stays in their comfort zone.
Yeah, and I believe when you're arguing from a position that you don't have a lot of evidence to support, you tend to use these kind of devices.
So now he's admitted what he spent 5 minutes denying, that there are many. There are many physicists who say, well, maybe the fine-tuned parameters could be explained by this randomness of millions or trillions of universes. He also said, well, the Big Bang, they think time started at the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
So his lingo there was T equals zero.
Yep.
He said, so we don't know exactly at time equals zero or before, he said. And that made me think of J.R. Lucas, an Oxford professor, wrote a book called The Future. Brilliant book. And in this book, he says it's an incoherent concept to talk about what it was like before time. He said that's incoherent.
Before T zero.
Right. And these guys, including Stephen Hawking and Lawrence Krauss, they do that all the time. What happened before there was time? Incoherent. What you're saying is irrational.
Can't agree more, Bob. Let's start the tape.
There are many physicists who point out that there are various fundamental theories that predict the existence of many different universes, and therefore one possibility to explain the parameters that we see is that they are randomly distributed over universes, and we only exist in the universes that allow life. The problem with all of that, of course, is we don't even know what all sorts of intelligent life are. We don't know if the parameters of our universe are vastly different, whether a different source of intelligent life would evolve. We don't know even if we're typical of life in the universe. These are open questions at the forefront of physics, which is why we continue to look out instead of trying to assume we know all the answers.
Here's how it looks to me. By the way, the book is A Universe from Nothing, Lawrence Krauss, afterword by Richard Dawkins. Here's the way it looks to me. When Richard Dawkins joins the discoverer of DNA and so many atheists and evolutionists now, saying that perhaps...
Well, I don't know what you mean by atheists and evolutionists.
There's some people who are atheists, some people are evolutionists, some people are not.
What do you mean by evolutionists?
People who believe molecules to man evolution. Neo-Darwinism. Can I tell you what they're saying before
the people who accept the evidence of empirical science? The same people who believe the Earth is round.
Those people. Well, the president of the Flat Earth Society is a Darwinist.
I'm just saying he's an idiot for being a president of Flat Earth.
I agree with you. See, we agree on something.
Yeah, exactly. Lawrence, and all I'm saying is there are no scientists who aren't evolutionists.
Could I make my point?
So you believe in gravity?
Could I make my point so you can tell me I'm wrong?
They're on the same level of footing.
When Richard Dawkins and so many atheists say that perhaps because of the complexity of molecular biology, they join the discoverer of DNA in saying maybe life came here from aliens, they seeded life on Earth. And when physicists are saying there must be trillions of universes or there might be septillions or we can't even pronounce the number, it seems that they're merely punting to explain the complexity that we can see. They're proposing infinitely greater complexity. And so to explain one living cell on Earth, they posit alien civilizations, space travel, quadrillions of cells to explain one cell on Earth. Could you agree, Lawrence Krauss, that when they say that, they're merely punting?
Well, I don't know. You're asking, when did you stop beating your wife? I don't concede that people are saying that. I've never heard people say
that. You have never heard. How about panspermia?
Hold on. At my institute that I run here at the university, the Origins Project, one of the things we look at is the origin of life. And what people are looking at is specific chemical reactions that could lead to the development of organic molecules. And I don't hear anyone talking about aliens there's this idea of panspermia that is an interesting possibility, namely that the first organic molecules didn't evolve on Earth. But
how about Richard Dawkins? I transcribed Richard Dawkins.
I'm with Richard Dawkins all the time, and he's never said that with me.
I watched this 15 times on video, and I published the transcription on our RealScienceFriday.com website. Dawkins said that the origin of life, quote, might have come about in this way. The evidence may show, as we look at the complexity, as we look at the genetic mechanisms, that might be evidence that a long time ago, far, far away in another galaxy, that there was a civilization that evolved by Darwinian means, and that civilization designed life and seeded it on our Earth. Lawrence, he actually said a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, like he's watching Star Wars.
Well, he's not an expert in astronomy. He's probably more likely by a star in our galaxy.
Yeah, right. Anyway. So he said that along with, by my extrapolation of the atheist and evolutionist I debate, thousands have posited that life might have come here from aliens, including the co-discoverer of DNA, Francis Crick. I can't believe you've never heard of this theory.
Transpermia. It's a fascinating idea.
Yeah, but do you agree with me that they're only punting? Because if biological life is so complex that it couldn't evolve here on such a hospitable planet, then why would it evolve somewhere else? You got the same problems there as here. Don't you agree they're just punting?
Well, first of all, the argument, there's no one I know who says that there's any evidence that life is too complicated to have evolved here.
Stop the tape. We'll hear the rest next week.
Hey, Bob, so I loved how he said that he'd never heard of panspermia, and then later he said it was an interesting idea, and then after that he said it was a fascinating idea.
Yeah, I'm glad I could share it with him.
Yeah, and I love that midsection jab you got to him on the Flat Earth Society guy being a Darwinist.
He said there are no scientists who don't believe in evolution. He must be cloistered like a nun or, I guess, a monk. He must be. He hasn't heard of them. And also, they have conceded half of our argument.
Yes.
Richard Dawkins says that life looks designed, and he finally admitted, he did admit it, that the universe, it comes up in part two, but he already said it somewhat, is exquisitely designed to exist.
Yeah, part two, David's going to go to town on Goliath.
Oh, God bless you guys.
Hey, science fans, now you can have all of the Real Science Friday shows on MP3 CD from 2007, 2008, or 2009. Hear Bob and Fred present the compelling scientific evidence that the Earth is young and that there is a creator. Real Science Friday 2007, 2008, and 2009 are each available by calling 1-800-8-NYART. Or you can get the MP3 CDs or the MP3 downloads at kgovstore.com.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, all from our website, kgov.com, or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. Fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott, and Does God Exist? Bob Enyart Debates Atheist Zaketh, a psychologist, and then Mount St. Helens, The Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the Earth, where I got to debate a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realsciencefriday.com.
Would you like to study the Bible, but don't really know where to start? Bob Enyart's seminar on hermeneutics, tools for studying the Bible, will help you to study and understand the Bible on a whole new level. Hermeneutics, Tools for Studying the Bible, is available by calling 1-800-8-ENYART, or you can get the MP3 CD or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.